my first bike, the Leaf, it was too big for me. I went to the bike fit and the guy was like, I cannot do anything. This bike doesn't fit you and will never fit you because you have a very strange body. You have like long legs and short torso. Yeah. You need to get a size smaller and a shorter stem. And I was like, how do I make a bike work for me?
Hello everyone and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Umpa Lumpa Cycling Channel. Today I'm thrilled to have an extraordinary guest with us today, very last minute, but I'm glad that we could make it. We have Sherry here all the way from Netherlands, originally from Colombia. And you're here today in Singapore, but I heard you're going to go over to Taiwan tomorrow. We'll speak about that later on. And just a brief introduction about Sherry. She started her cycling journey just 3 years ago. And in that short span, she has achieved a remarkable feats. Not only is she an accomplished cyclist, a trailblazer, but breaking barriers and setting records. So Sherry made history as the first woman to race around the Netherlands, demonstrating her tenacity and skill in navigating challenging terrains, and together with her cycling partner, Geron, yeah, I get it right. She clinched the title of the first pair to conquer the Transcontinental Race, TCR, showcasing the power of teamwork in the world of endurance cycling. But that's not all. Sherry emerged as the triumphant winner in the Bohemian Border Bash. I'm not very familiar with all these races, but maybe you can enlighten me a little bit later. She's also the first woman to conquer this demanding race. And if that wasn't enough, this year she took on an audacious challenge to do the Paris Audax and further solidifying her place among the elite in the ultra cycling realm. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Sherry. Thank you, Sherry, for coming onto the show. Sherry, you've been in Singapore for a couple of days now. How are you liking it?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, it was in my bucket list for a while, so I'm happy to be here and to be able to make a quick stop here. I couldn't leave without visiting you.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. What you've been doing quite a lot of cycling. I know this morning Jeff, who is the owner of Farah, but he said he will not intervene. You guys, he sent me a picture of you guys in Johor Bahru today. Wow, you guys went to JB alone, just the both of you?
Well, we actually went with two more people. So Maya, who is also ambassador for Farah, and Tom, which is a really nice guy. He's living here in Singapore. It was quite an adventure. We got lost and somehow ended up in the ghost city or forest city.
Wow. Okay, cool. And, you know, I've watched a couple of your videos. You do ultra endurance cycling. What is that like? And how did you even get into that? Like, it's long distance riding, right? How do you find that?
Well, a lot of people ask me, are you crazy? And in a way, you could say yes. But I got there during COVID. I started cycling in the Netherlands because everything was closed and the only thing you could do is cycling outside. So with my partner, Geron, we decided to go around the Netherlands and we did it quite fast. And then we were like, oh, maybe it could be nice to do it in a competitive environment. So then we started doing races, long distance races. And from then on, we got addicted. It's an addictive sport.
Yeah, I think you can do it indefinitely in Europe, where you know the terrain is much more challenging, you've got much more spaces to do that. And now let's wind it back a little bit. 3 years ago, what got you into cycling?
I always wanted to start cycling, but I never took that step. And I think it's the adventure side because it allows you to explore places and go to places you wouldn't go otherwise. And also, I love the cycling community. For example, here, how different people from different countries, different backgrounds come together because they enjoy the same sport is just amazing.
Right. And what was the first bike?
The first bike was the bike of my partner, which was like two sizes bigger, like 58. And I was like overstretched and I couldn't even reach the brakes. Yeah. And after that, when I got a proper bike, I was like, I appreciated having a bike that fit me.
Yeah. You had a Cervelo, right?
Yeah.
Was that the first actual bike that you owned, or was
No, the first actual bike I owned was a Leaf MVA with the Race Team Series. Mm. It was like a fast road bike, but it was so stiff. I had pain everywhere.
And I think you did a video of a bike fitting as well, right? Mm-hmm. How did the bike fit help you in terms of deciding for a bike, and would you recommend people go for a bike fit?
Definitely. For example, my first bike, the Leaf, it was too big for me. I went to the bike fit and the guy was like, I cannot do anything. This bike doesn't fit you and will never fit you because you have a very strange body. You have like long legs and short torso. Yeah. You need to get a size smaller and a shorter stem. And I was, how do I make a bike work for me? And I had the Cervelo Aspero, but it was like, I looked like a T-Rex in a mini bike, you know, because it was like, even though, I adapted it, it was a small frame, smaller than the size I would like. Mm-hmm. But still wasn't fitted well. And then I got the Fara, which has an endurance geometry. And then it was like, oh, that's nice. I don't need a tower of spacers and a super short stem. Yeah. So yeah, it was really nice to have a bike that fits
can,
me.
Can fit you, right? Yeah, yeah. And I've interviewed a couple of ladies here on the show, and they are generally, their proportions where they have a short torso and very long legs. They find it a bit hard to get a bike. So one of the recent ladies that I filmed, she had the Specialized Atos. Mm-hmm. So it looked really weird on her because apparently that frame size suited her, but she had a very long seat post but a very short reach. For those ladies out there, do you think there's a particular bike that you think would work for most ladies, or should they get custom fitted? What's your opinion on that?
I think doing a bike fit before you get kind of your dream bike is good, because like this, you don't have to change all the components after to try to make it fit. But I found in my case, in particularly having an endurance all-road bike that has an endurance geometry, is the reach is shorter, but I can still have a normal size frame. Mm. So I think in general, that could be a good alternative for somebody that has issues like that.
Yeah. Before we get into the bike, let's talk about riding in Singapore. Just before we started rolling, you went to JB, and I think you went and I asked you, how early do you guys normally start in the Netherlands and in Europe? You start at 10 o'clock, and over here in Singapore it's 6 o'clock before the sun rises. How do you find cycling in Singapore?
Oh, it was a very different experience from Europe. Also, the traffic I'm not used to, because in Netherlands we are a bit spoiled. We have our own lane everywhere. You can even get to the airport by bike. Yeah, okay. It's amazing. Like a bike first. And for example, you always have the priority. Even if you run over somebody with your bike, it's their fault.
So do people just go running over people and it's like, I'm not at fault?
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about it. Netherlands, where you know they've got a lot of cycling lanes, they're very pro cyclists, right? Mm-hmm. And so you guys you don't even ride on the road, you ride on the pavement, cycling pavement.
You have perfectly smooth cycle lanes everywhere, and the good thing in the cycle lanes, you don't have traffic lights. So for example, I do a loop of 160 kilometers like every weekend, and I basically don't have to stop.
And this is a cycling lane.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And even over here in Singapore, obviously we don't have much space. Every couple of 200-300 meters, there's another traffic light. Do you find that a bit irritating that there's just so many lights ahead of you?
Well, if you're trying to go on your training ride, that could that could be a bit annoying, I guess.
And how was the ride to Johor this morning?
It was an adventure, I must say. We didn't have a route, so we got lost. We ended up in some roads.
Yeah.
But it was a really nice experience, because you see places you wouldn't see otherwise, and kind of you really start to understand how everything works in the country, and you see different parts of the city. So it's really, really nice.
Okay, so let's speak about the bike. This is a Fara All Road. Jeff said not to use the E word, endurance. How did Fara come into play in your cycling? Did they approach you? Did you find out a brand? How did it all start?
Well, I first saw a Far bike in a magazine, like Tour magazine. They had like an article about the integrated bags, because one thing that I am obsessed about is like bikepacking bags. As a ultra endurance cyclist for races, you want to optimize your setup. So they have these nicely integrated bags directly into the frame, so you don't need to fiddle with straps, etc. So that's when I first heard about Farah, and then Jeff got in touch, and he's an ultra cyclist, so you could see like it's a bike designed for the rider. Sometimes you have really nice bikes, but for most people it will not work. It's like maybe for a Tour of France rider, yes, but for most people it wouldn't work. And the Farah bikes is just like really fun to ride, and yeah, I think it's perfect, for example, in this case, the all-road bike for somebody looking into going into endurance cycling, because you can really, it's really comfortable for riding long distances.
Yeah. So you ride the Farah All Road. Have you tried any of the other series yet, or you're only riding on this one?
Well, yes, I have the, also the Farah gravel bike. I use it in the race Bohemian Border Bash. I actually won this one. Was first woman, and it was my first race. And to be honest, I crash a lot of times, and the bike survived, so I was really happy. Yeah.
And as cyclists, we are always making sure whether our bike is okay instead of ourselves, right? When we drop the bike, is the bike okay?
Yeah. A little scratch.
Yeah. Okay. And tell us more. Are you familiar with the brand Farah? I'm sure you are. Where is it originally from? Where it's made? And how long have they been in business?
Well, and the bikes are assembled in Taiwan, and they are a Norwegian brand at the heart. So, for example, the Farah All Road is based on the Oslo project. So in Oslo, you could go on a paved road and all of the sudden enter in a perfectly smooth gravel road. So the bike is designed so you can also use like a like gravel tires, like that you can fit up to 35 millimeter tires, so you can go with road tires, with like a tires that you could use on light gravel. And I actually went to Oslo and got to ride some of these amazing like champagne gravel with quality in Europe when it's perfectly smooth.
Yeah
So
how does that compare with Singapore roads? Apparently Singapore roads is extremely smooth.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah They're very smooth roads. Yeah. I must say, and I really like the cycling culture here. Like everybody's so nice and social. Like people here go for coffee, food after the ride. In Netherlands, it's like, okay, we finished, we went fast, bye.
That is me, actually. I have to go back before my wife wakes up. Okay, so you have this is the All Road. Could you just give us a breakdown of the bike and your components of choice?
So this one is a bike I'm testing here in Singapore, but this one has a SRAM Red. It's the same one I have in my bike back in Amsterdam. And every time, because in ultra endurance cycling, when you're doing a race of nearly 4,000 kilometers, you need to look at every component, durability, and also I'm a bit of a weight weenie. I like lightweight components.
Okay.
So yeah, SRAM Red. Then in this one we have zip wheels. Mm-hmm. I also have some other like bike ahead composite wheels at home that I use because they are lightweight. And the Farah handlebar, I'm testing a prototype, which I love, so...
Can we talk about that, or is still under prototype that we cannot speak about?
Ooh, well, some people might have seen it on my YouTube videos.
Oh, Jeff has given the thumbs up. Maybe can we speak about that? So how does that work?
To be honest, is one of the questions I get the most. Is like, everybody's like, where can I get this handlebar? So it's because it's like a bit... It looks a bit like the handlebar of some of the Cervelo bikes. It has this split in the middle.
S5. Yeah.
So it has this split, but you can actually adjust it because it's a two-piece handlebar, and it's super cool. The thing I like the most is that you can clamped directly aero bars, so directly with screws, and it looks super clean, like for example like a time trial bike. And in ultra cycling, most ultra cyclists use aero bars, so that was my dream. When I saw it, I was like, Jeff, I need to get it.
So that bar, I guess what makes it special is, besides from the fact that you can mount the TT bars, is you can adjust the reach.
Mm-hmm.
And how is it adjusted? Do you have like a wrench there that you could just loosen and just pull it on the go, or
there is a set of screws and you can move it around and you can adjust the reach to a certain degree. Yeah.
Okay. And is that only available for the gravel series, or can you just mount it on the road, or?
I believe you could mount it in any Faro bike. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that's under prototype. I guess people can watch your video when you release that, right? I'm not going to steal your show for that.
you can save it for your wish list.
Okay. And what about saddle? I know females generally have like a female specific saddle. Is there one of choice for you?
Yeah, I actually like the Power Mirror saddle, the 3D printed one. I think it's quite nice. I had like the Power Mimic before, which is specifically designed for women. And I find like short nose saddle, if you want to ride in more aggressive positions, like on the drops, or you want to go for a long time in aero bars, for example, that's super comfortable because it allows you to open your hip angle. So then you can go more comfortable and faster.
Mm. Speaking of hip angle, are you very particular with the crank length? Are you using something very short or very long, like 165, 172.5?
No, I have the standard of 172, I think. Okay, yeah.
That's pretty long.
Yeah.
You are quite tall. I think you're almost my height or even taller than me. How tall are you?
I'm 174.
Well, yeah. Okay, she's taller than me. And what about bike sizing then? How do you decide on bike sizing?
Oh, that was a challenge. What I mentioned is like, okay, I'm tall, but the size that I'm supposed to ride, I cannot ride it because of my short torso, because of the reach. And the Faro one, I have like a 53, but before, for example, with the Cervelo one, I needed like a 51 or something. And then I feel like, as I said, a T-Rex in a kid's bike. I was like, oh my God, that looks a bit.
Yeah.
I didn't like it much, to be honest. I was like, finally, a bike that I look normal on.
Yeah, and I think if you have the wrong bike fit, it will definitely jeopardize your riding, and you will not like it. You'll feel super painful on it, and you know. Okay, cool. And do you have a power meter as well?
Yes, so I use I have power meter pedals, but I want to get a crank-based one because it's really important in ultra races to keep your zones and really stay in your zones, because if you overpace, you will pay for it later in the race. And I also use it for training. I do some interval training, etc. So you have to keep in the in certain zones. Yeah.
Okay. Before I pivot on to speaking about your racing and ultra long distance racing, can you just give us a quick wrap up of this bike? How do you think it performs? Just imagine that Jeff is not here. Give us an honest review of this Farah brand.
Well, I only write things that I like because I can.
Okay.
So that's why I love the Faro bike. As I said, like, it's very comfortable, it's very versatile, so you can put gravel tires. I use it for the UCI gravel series, and the pros were like, oh, I'm going aggressive with 40 millimeter tires. I was like, I have a 35.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you on clinchers, tubeless?
Tubeless, yeah, tubeless. Yeah, I love tubeless, like Conti 5000 AS. Yeah, that's my tire of choice.
I'm running clinchers 25, and what do you have to say for my running? I run 110 PSI. Everyone roasts me in Singapore. They say like, are you crazy? You're running 110, you're so old school. But I find it fast. I'm not sure. Do anyone run such high pressures these days?
It's a really shifting. Like, for example, I use normally 30, 32.
Going for wider and lower pressure.
Yeah, and actually some tests, you know, because in perfect conditions, okay, like velodrome or where people test it, but in most of the roads are not perfect, are quite bumpy. So actually bigger tires tend to be faster in this regard.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about ultra and long distance cycling. I'm not familiar with this. I've only seen your videos. But how long are we talking about? Like when we mention the word ultra long distance, how long are these races normally?
Well, this year I did the Transcontinental Race, which was the longest race, and it was like 10 days. Yeah.
Wow, non-stop.
Non-stop. So you go like, it was 3,600 or something like this. Oh, so you go, you cross Europe. You walk in this year, we went from Belgium to Greece by bike.
3,600 kilometers in 10 days. Yeah. And it's a race, right? Yeah. So the first to cross the line.
Yeah.
And it's not time-based.
Time, yeah, you have your time and you have your time and the at the control points along the way. Okay.
Wow. Mm. How do you train for all this? What's your training schedule like?
Well, when I started cycling, I thought you just ride. But then as I started getting more into it, I got a coach and now we're doing some, I think it's more polarized training. So you do your base mileage in the weekend, like long rides, some two, and then you have some intervals during the week or some sweet spot training, etc. Yeah.
Mm. And when you go for this kind of races, how do you prepare and bring, what do you bring on the bike? I'm sure you have a lot of baggage that you have. What do you put in the nutrition, if you could just share a little bit more about that?
For everybody that is not familiar with ultra cycling is more like ultra races are more like an eating competition rather than a cycling competition. It's like you are eating all the time, so I always try to carry as much food as I can in my bikepacking bags. So normally you use bikepacking bags to carry your gear because you are not allowed to have any support. So you have to go yourself to supermarkets, resupply, repair your own bike if it breaks down, etc. So normally I have the Fara integrated frame bag, which is really cool because you can just remove it with magnets and it's really like clean look. I really like that. And then I have a top tube bag, a saddle bag, and I have some spare clothes and some repair kit, but mostly food.
What kind of food do you put in there? What kind of food do you put in? It's like mostly carbs or?
I must confess, I cycle only to eat Haribo. I love Haribo gummy bears.
Okay, but do you stop to have like lunch and dinner, or are you always cycling and eating at the same time?
No. It's like if you want to be competitive in this kind of events, every minute counts. So you just rush into a gas station or a supermarket, you load your pockets with food and you continue riding.
Wow, I can't imagine. So if it's 10 days, 3,600 kilometers, if my maths serve me right, that's about 360 kilometers a day.
Yeah.
And do you take, I mean, obviously you have to sleep. Are you very particular like how many hours I sleep before I wake up and start racing again?
A lot of people follow the rules, like their sleep cycle, so you don't want to interrupt them. So like 90 minutes or 3 hours, so depending of the day. And a lot of people sleep outside, but I like comfort, so I take a hotel and then have a nap for 3 hours and then continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that very crucial to have enough rest and sleep? Can I just do it non-stop and, you know, just take very short breaks, and am I able to save time by doing that?
Well, some of the guys at the front, they manage with power naps, so they take like a 90 minutes power nap and then continue, which I was like, well, sleeping on the side of the road on a bench or something, I was like, I couldn't do that. That doesn't work for me.
What do you think is the biggest hurdle or challenge in terms of doing such long distance racing? What's your biggest fear?
Biggest fear. That's really funny. I don't know. You are so tired that you are not scared anymore. Things that will scare you is like, as long as I keep on rolling. But I think having a mechanical or being trapped in the middle of nowhere, like sometimes you go to very remote areas where there's no phone signal or anything like that.
Yeah. And I'm sure you don't use a normal road cycling computer. You must use some kind of specific ones that has a lot of mapping used. What kind of cycling computer do you use?
I really like the new Garmin Solar computer because you cannot stop much, so you don't have the chance to charge a lot of your devices. So the Solar computer lasts for like 1,000 kilometers, something like that. And it's like, great, if it's sunny, it lasts a very long time. And they really improved the maps on the new Garmin. So I'm quite happy with that one.
Right. So when you do these races, obviously, just now you've mentioned that you need to monitor your power output. Is that the main metric that you look when you're racing?
Yeah, half my power meter, the heart rate, and I use the Super Sapiens glucose monitor. I also look at my glucose levels because sometimes you forget to eat and because you have to constantly eat in these races. But mostly, yeah, the power, because the heart rate after one day or two without much sleep start to be depressed. So you cannot rely on your heart rate because it's always depressed, because your immune system is depressed, everything. So power is a good metric if you want to monitor your zones and maybe not overextend yourself.
Right. And you use SRAM rate, which I guess is very beneficial for such long races, especially when the battery runs out. You can just swap them out very quickly. How many batteries do you bring on this kind of races?
Well, I have like two spare batteries. Once I was in a race and my battery died and all that. And then I had spare battery, but I couldn't make it work. I don't know why. And I was freezing. And then I made it one by. So I just took the battery from the front derailleur and I put it at the back and just rode one by.
Wow. How long can this battery last?
I tested it, actually. That's why I ran out of battery. Mm. And it was like 1,200 kilometers in cold conditions. It was like 5 degrees during the night and 15 degrees during the day.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. And you have, I'm sure, very bright lights to illuminate the roads. What lights are you using?
I'm using a German brand, Supernova. They are really good. And the good thing is like you can use it while charging it from a power bank. So that's something I was looking for. And it was quite difficult to find a light that you could use while charging it simultaneously from a power bank.
What are the key accessories that you need to bring with you on such races that you cannot not have?
Spare pair of bib shorts.
How many do you bring with you?
One. Okay. No, but lights, bike computer, the bags. I think an aero bars. Yes, not only makes you faster, but it's more comfortable because for 10 days with your hands on the handlebar, you get numbness in your hands and you don't feel your fingers after like a day or two. But if you can change the position, it's better. And also it gives you another sitting point. So you are not seated always upright in the same position. So it's much better.
And you run tubeless. Have you ever encountered a situation where you get a puncture, but the sealant doesn't seal itself? And is that, in that situation, what do you do? Do you just put in a tube?
Well, I had before tire inserts, and that was terrible because it dried out the sealant. Mm-hmm. So you could keep on riding with the tire insert, but then it was not good. So if the sealant is not sealing it, I use Dynaplugs. That's like great. I had once like 8 Dynaplugs in a tire, and it was cute. It was working, and I even used it after the race. So
that's the one where you just patch the hole, right?
Yeah. You have a plug and you just click.
Wow, and it works? It.
Yeah, it's like the best thing I ever tried. Yeah.
Okay, cool. You said you're a weight weenie.
Yeah.
What is the bike weight? Okay, this is not your bike, but the one back home. How heavy is that bike?
The full build with pedals, computer mount for an endurance bike was quite light, like 8 kilos.
That's quite light. My aero bike, a road bike, is 8 kilograms.
Yeah.
It's quite heavy. Okay, cool. But do you know what about this weight here? I mean, we'll weigh it later. How heavy do you think this bike is?
I think this one has from right, I think. Yeah, like 7 kilos, I think.
7 kilos.
That's my guess.
That's your guess. Okay, we'll find out later.
We'll find out.
Okay, before we go on to the Instagram questions that we have, I have a couple for you. What I was going to ask about. Okay, what is your apparel of choice and your gears that you bring with you? What, helmets, shades and stuff?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing is the bib shorts. So you need bib shorts that you can wear for like a... nearly 4,000 kilometers. That's always the challenge. So I use Velocio apparel. I love the bib shorts because they're super comfortable and compressive, so they really stay in place. One of the things that causes a lot of saddle discomfort for people is that the chamois moves around. So this one, when it's compressive, the bib shorts, it really stays in place. And then I use their Concept, this one, the Concept jersey, because it's quite breathable. So if you go, like, for example, during summer to the Balkans in Europe, it could be really, really warm. So that's quite breathable. And then I love the look of the CAS Proton. I also have, when I want to go fast, like the CAS Utopia, like an aero helmet, depending on the conditions, I use one or the other. And then the Oakley photochromatic glasses. These ones are great.
Do you find the photochromatic lens, does it switch very fast or it takes some time for it to tint?
I think it switches quite fast. Yeah, okay. I really like them, but I always lose my glasses in races. every year I have to buy new glasses.
Yeah, okay. And you run Shimano MTB pedals. And what shoes do you have?
I have Quok shoes. I'd really like, even on road, to have MTB shoes because you have the walking thread. So in ultra races, you have to run in and out of the supermarket quickly. So it's easier also if you have to do some hike bike or something like this. You never know what you can find in this kind of races. So the Quok shoes, I really like it. I have the Grand Tourer ones that have two boa dials and are really comfortable. And then I have some Silk Aero socks because every word matters. So I was like, okay, you know, even if it's like 1 watt, 2 watts, I know I will get faster.
If every watt matters, are you familiar with the oversized pulley wheel, the OSPW? Yeah. Everyone in Singapore has it. What do you think of that? Will you ever get one?
I have.
You have one?
Yeah, I use the Kogel oversized pulley wheels both in my gravel bike and in my road bike.
Does it work?
I don't know if it works, but it looks super cool.
It looks cool. Yeah, I mean, but it's expensive.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, in Singapore, I'm not sure what's the retail price. I think it's north of $500 over.
Yeah.
Some people would say it's placebo, that, you know, you think that you have that, but it might not or might make you faster. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's, at some point you're looking for marginal gains, let's say.
Yeah,
so I think that's when oversized pulley wheels come into place, I think.
What do you think is the biggest upgrade a rider can make?
Aero bars. Doesn't matter, like, you have aero wheels, aero bike, if you put aero bars, it will make it fast.
Because of the position.
Because of the position and skin suits,
But it destroys the look of the bike. You have aero bars, it looks weird.
I love the look. Really? Yeah, I have like super cool ones, like with the Farah handlebar. I can clamp them directly and it's like this dead-out one-piece carbon aero bars. And I actually love the look. It looks a bit like a Batman bike.
Okay, so do you have any other bikes or just the Farah ones for now?
Yeah, just the Farah ones. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move on to some questions from my followers, or could be your follower as well. But before I go there, I was speaking to my friend and I was like, I'm going to interview Sherry, and obviously some of them know you. And he has one question for you. This is from my personal friend. She says, I'm curious to know how you fund your races. Do you have a day job or are you sponsored?
Yeah, I have a day job. Actually, last year, I used all my vacation for ultra racing. They were like, my colleagues were like, what? You're going to race for 10 days sleeping outside? It's like, yeah, that's my vacation.
Okay.
But now I have a more flexible job, so I can do even more races.
but YouTube, how did you start YouTube? What inspired you to start doing YouTube?
Oh, I started doing YouTube videos when I was a teenager and I really enjoyed it. And then I found cycling and I wanted to share the journey because I found there was nobody else that showed what happens, really. It was a bit, the content I saw about ultra cycling or for beginner cyclists was a bit glossy. So I wanted to show how is to start in these kind of events and, you know, show the good, the not so good. So for anybody that wants to do it, they know what they are getting into.
Yeah, I realized in your YouTube channel, most of the popular videos are all on the ultra cycling and very interesting. And what camera do you bring to film all of this?
Well, I bring my GoPro phone and also the Sony CV1 is a really compact one and I really like it. It's you can put it on your top tube bag and easily reach it during races.
Where do you think your YouTube channel is heading? What's your plan for the YouTube channel?
Well, I want to create more, but I don't want to make it about me. I want to create more a platform so that has like useful tips. Also, I started my podcast to have like yourself interesting conversations with people and speak about things that you wouldn't do in like a video. So like this, you have the chance to ask questions. And I also have my blog where I share the routes, because a lot of people ask me, oh, can you share the routes of your bikepacking trip? So like this, they can do it also.
Wow. Okay. All the best with that channel.
Thank you so
Maybe
much.
Next time you can have me on if I am ever in Europe.
Yeah, well, the podcast is online, so okay, you can connect from here.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so let's go on to the questions. The first question from submitted, how do you manage saddle sores?
Oh, that's where the good bib shorts comes in place and the bike fit. Yeah. Mm. So if you have a good bike fit, you have your reach, you know, and also your sitting position dialed, that's what makes the difference, I think. And yeah, really finding, as I said, like I like the compressive bib shorts because the chamois stays in place. Mm. Yeah.
Do you think it's more of the chamois or it's more of the bike fitting and the saddle? Which one is the most important one?
I think it's both. It's how they interact with each other. So, for example, you find like some saddle bib short combination that really works. But if your bike fit is bad and you're moving all the time in the bike, like, okay, trying to reach your brakes, etc., because maybe your reach is too long, then you will be more likely to get saddle sores. Mm. So I think your bike fitting, is the most important. Yeah.
Okay. So
and a good pair of bib shorts. Yeah.
Okay. And good pair of bib shorts. Next question is, what keeps you awake for long rides?
I found really useful the glucose monitor because you can see sometimes there's a chart, and if you see it dips your glucose levels, normally you get very sleepy. Mm. So I know when I'm gonna get sleepy, and then I try to have a Coca-Cola or something with caffeine to keep awake.
So glucose monitor, how does that work? You got to pin it into your bloodstream and then use an app that taps into that.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Exactly. You have like a patch.
Yeah.
It uses like the same sensor that they use for diabetic people. Mm. And then the one I use, Super Sapiens, you can even connect it with your Garmin, so you can have the glucose value in your head unit.
Oh, really?
So it also, you can set alarms, and if your blood glucose is dropping, it will give you an alarm, so you are like, oh, okay, I have to eat. Because the problem in ultra cycling, a lot of people don't eat enough, and then they are like getting sleepy, or they run out of energy. Mm. Yeah, you start having even pains, like, eh? And then you eat something and it's like, oh, I'm okay again.
Yeah. Have you ever fallen asleep while cycling?
I think so. Yeah. I think there's these micro naps that you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you start having hallucinations. Like a lot of times, did this happen? It's
God.
That can be real. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And what happens in a race where I just want to call it quits and I want to DNF and did not finish, right?
Yeah.
Is there someone that's going to pick me up, or how does that work?
Sometimes people don't DNF from these races because it's harder to get out of the place where you are. So,
just gotta finish it.
Yeah. Or try to get to the next checkpoint or something.
Okay,
yeah.
So you've really got to train for this and make sure you know what's going to happen. But do you do like a recce ride? Do you go and visit the routes and give it a try first before going, or you just go it on the race day?
My first race around the Netherlands, because it was where I live, I did a recon ride, so I knew everything. But the other places, I don't have time to go to the other side of Europe to do a recon ride. So there is just, okay, let's see what happens. Yeah, but there's a lot of surprises in this race.
Okay, cool. Next question is, what is the longest ride you have done?
In one go, I think 500 kilometers in one go.
In one go? Is that in a day or over 2 or 3 days?
No, without stopping. We did it 24 hours. We went from Amsterdam to Paris. But I think the longest one was in a race. We didn't stop for nearly 1,000 kilometers.
This is insane. Okay, cool. Next question is, what is your most treasured accessory on ultra rides?
Hmm. The beep shorts.
The beep shorts. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. Are you very particular with a certain brand or any brand works for you?
Yeah, the Veloce ones are the only ones that works for me. And also because it has this fly-free feature for females, it's like you don't lose time if you have a nature break. Every minute counts. So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That is all I have for you today. Again, Sherry, thank you so much for coming and spending the time here with me. Again, everyone, please do check out her YouTube channel. She's very popular on YouTube, Sherry. Buzz along. You've got free airtime here if you've got anything to say to fellow viewers here in Asia and Singapore.
I'm really excited to explore, and thank you for the warm welcome, and looking forward to see the new places. I think tomorrow we're going to Taiwan.
Are you going anywhere after Taiwan or are you going back?
No, just Taiwan. Going back.
All right, and hope to see you again next time, either in Singapore or if I visit Europe. And round of applause for Sherry. Thank you guys. Sé que como un trofeo quieres tenerme, pero I don't need no one. Que yo ya sé que de ti I got to stay, we got to stay with.